It's the Red Tag Sales Event at Jeff Weiler Chevrolet of Columbus. Look for the red tags and unlock unbeatable discounts on new and pre-owned Chevys. 0% APR on select new Chevrolet for well-qualified buyers. From the rugged Silverado to the sleek Malibu, every tag means savings. Financing made easy. We'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. Stop by Jeff Weiler Chevrolet on Gender Road or shop anytime at jeffweilercolumbus.com. That's jeffweilercolumbus.com.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Welcome back to Basketball Home, your ultimate shortcut to being the most informed fan in the arena. It is November 24th, and well, if you thought the season usually slows down before the holiday rush, you were dead wrong.
Oh, completely wrong. The basketball world is spinning faster than ever.
It really is. We're spanning everything from career announcements in the NBA to these revolutionary cash-fueled tournaments that are defining the NCAA landscape.
That's absolutely right. We are hitting a really critical inflection point right now. In college hoops, the major multi-team tournaments, the MTEs, they're kicking off.
Right.
Most notably, that massive Players Era Festival in Vegas, which we'll get into. And for those who don't know, MTEs are basically these early season events, you know, round robin or bracketed, to give teams high major exposure before conference play. And meanwhile, in the NBA, you've got cornerstone players announcing the end of their careers, major injury returns about to shift the power balance, and that front office trade machine is already running hot.
It is humming. So our mission today is to break down every critical nugget of information, from a legend's final bow to why a team like the Celtics needs a simple non-shooting center to really unlock their offense.
Yeah.
We're covering career-defining announcements. We'll analyze the clutch performances and surprising upsets from the weekend and really get into the strategic and financial implications driving both leagues.
It's the intersection of legacy, strategy, and just pure chaos. And some pretty serious off-court news we need to address, too. We're here to sort it all out for you.
So let's start with a necessary moment of respect for one of the greatest point guards of all time and his final timeline.
Yeah, we have to.
We have the stunning, though maybe anticipated, news confirming Chris Paul's retirement timeline. This isn't a rumor.
Nope.
The point guard, currently with the Clippers, has announced he plans to hang him up after the 2025-26 season.
That will be his 21st year in the league. I mean, that is
21 years. That truly puts him in the rarest of air. You're ranking alongside Dirk Nowitzki, Vince Carter, that kind of longevity and commitment at an elite level.
The word legend, you know, it gets thrown around too easily. But for Chris Paul, it absolutely fits.
Oh, for sure.
We're talking about a player whose strategic vision fundamentally changed the geometry of the game for multiple franchises. He wasn't just a stats accumulator. He was a culture setter.
Right.
Remember, he was the 2005-06 Rookie of the Year. And since then, 12 All-Star selections, spanning what? The Hornets, Clippers, Rockets, Thunder, Suns, Warriors, Spurs. He elevated every single team he played for.
And his impact was felt on both ends of the floor, too. He wasn't just this offensive maestro dictating pace. He made the All-Defensive team nine times. That consistent two-way play is what separates him from so many other elite playmakers.
And if you look at the all-time statistical context, this is where you really grasp his historical position. I mean, especially when you consider the style of basketball he played. Paul, at 40 years old, ranks second in NBA history in both steals and assists.
Wow.
To be second only to John Stockton, a player whose career total seemed untouchable for decades, is just astonishing.
It really is.
Six times he led the NBA in steals, five times he led in assists. The statistical reliability is insane. We're talking 16.9 points, 9.2 assists, 4 rebounds, and 2 steals across more than 1,300 games.
And beyond the numbers, his signature was that mid-range jumper and the ability to just slow the game down.
Yes. Know,
forcing the defense to play on his terms. That patient, calculated style is becoming so much rarer in today's three-point-focused NBA.
It's a lost start.
I always appreciate hearing the reactions from his contemporaries. And LeBron James, who has battled Paul for 2 decades, had a really emotional take on this, calling this year his last hurrah. It sounds like LeBron really understands the weight of this.
He absolutely does, especially since LeBron himself is setting new standards for age and performance. LeBron emphasized that he just hopes Paul finds complete joy in this final chapter. He stressed that he shouldn't look back and regret not taking advantage of every single moment. He noted that Paul is happy being back in Los Angeles, which clearly weighed heavily on his decision. And LeBron concluded by saying Paul has nothing to hang his head about and has done pretty much everything this league has to offer.
That's just a huge acknowledgement of their intertwined careers and that mutual respect, especially given their history as, you know, part of the Banana Boat crew.
Exactly.
And speaking of that rivalry, here's a piece of trivia that always surprises people.
Oh, I like this.
Despite LeBron's overall dominance, in the regular season, Chris Paul actually leads the head-to-head record against James, 18-17.
It's so close, but it just shows how competitive those matchups were and their only playoff series matchup.
I remember it well, 2021.
The Phoenix Suns, led by Paul, beat LeBron's Lakers 4-2. That's a testament to CP3's fierce competitiveness, even in the twilight of his career.
You can anticipate some incredibly intense basketball in the final four scheduled meetings between those two LA rivals this season. Every one of those battles will carry historic weight now.
Definitely.
Okay, moving from a career drawing to a close to a crucial return. The Miami Heat are about to get a major shot of adrenaline right as they are hitting their stride.
The Heat are already rolling. They're sitting at 11-6, riding a strong four-game win streak. But the real news is the imminent return of Tyler Herro. Sources are telling us he is expected to make his 2025-26 season debut this Monday night against the Dallas Mavericks, pending, you know, any last-minute setbacks.
And Hero's been out since late September, had that ankle surgery. The team's been fantastic without him, already averaging nearly 125 points per game.
So here's my challenge for you.
The Heat are already peak efficient, leading the league in scoring. What risk is there in adding a high-usage player back into an already humming offense, and why does Herro uniquely accelerate them further?
That is a critical question, and it speaks directly to Eric Spoelstra's philosophy. The risk is disruption, but the reward is immense versatility and relief. The Heat are averaging 124.9 points, shooting 48.2%. Herro doesn't just fill a gap.
Right.
He provides an elite shot creator who can handle defensive pressure when Jimmy Butler or Bam Adebayo are resting or facing double teams.
So he's not just a scorer, he's a pressure valve.
Exactly. You recall his 2024-25 All-Star season averages, 23.9 points, 5.2 rebounds, 5.5 assists, all while maintaining a stellar 56.3 effective field goal percentage.
That's efficient.
When Herro returns, he takes significant ball handling and playmaking duties away from the secondary guards, allowing them to just focus on defense and spot-up shooting. It means the Heat can generate high-quality offense with their second unit, which is crucial in a long playoff run.
So his return signals that Miami is moving from good start mode to contender lock-in mode even before the All-Star break.
That's it.
Okay, speaking of missing star power, let's pivot to a Western Conference surprise. The Houston Rockets. The 10-4 Rockets, who are performing shockingly well.
Way above expectations.
Yes, just one game shy of the West's second seed. They are dealing with a short-term loss of Kevin Durant.
Yeah, Durant's going to miss two absolutely key upcoming games to attend to a family matter, which is certainly understandable.
Of course.
But strategically, the timing is rough. Monday, they face his former team, the Phoenix Suns, and Wednesday, they face his other former team, the Golden State Warriors. Durant's impact in Houston this season has been immediate and transformative. He's averaging 24.6 points, 4.8 rebounds, 3.3 assists. He provides that veteran shot creation and stability that was really the last piece of the puzzle for this talented but very young core.
So losing 25 points of isolation scoring for two games against playoff caliber opponents is brutal. Who steps up to fill that void? I mean, especially given that Durant offers a level of scoring gravity no one else on that roster can match.
Well, the offensive load falls squarely onto the shoulders of Alperen Sengun, but he has to carry it differently.
Right.
Durant provides pure bucket getting. Sengun provides creation through the post and passing. Sengun is having an incredible season, averaging 22.7 points, 10 boards, and 7.3 assists. His playmaking from the high or low post will be the Rockets' primary offensive engine now.
And who do you think takes Durant's starting spot?
In terms of replacing him in the lineup, the most likely candidate is Reed Shepard. the young guard from Kentucky, who has just been fantastic off the bench. He's a perimeter specialist.
Shepard's the perfect candidate to shift the team's attack slightly, right?
Yeah.
Offering that floor spacing.
Exactly. He's coming off a career high, 27 points against the Nuggets recently. He's averaging 13.6 points and 3.1 assists in less than 24 minutes a game. And he's an elite perimeter shooter, hitting 48.8% from three. Wow.
So without Durant, the team doesn't try to find another ISO scorer. They just maximize the gravity of Sengun in the post and surround him with shooters.
So if that's the strategic approach, the predicted starting lineup without Durant is probably Shepard at point, Amen Thompson at shooting guard, Jabari Smith Jr. at small forward, Sengun at power forward, and maybe Steven Adams at center.
That lineup prioritizes floor spacing and rebounding. It aims to run the offense through the flow generated by Sengun. Jabari Smith Jr. is also shooting well from deep, and even Sengun is highly efficient from outside. This will be a great early test for Coach Ime Udoka's young core to show Durant that they can stabilize the team and find ways to win in his absence.
Well, the Lakers also survived a major scare and an injury in their weekend action. They beat the Utah Jazz 108-106. That's their second win over the Jazz this week, moving them to an impressive 12-4 overall.
It was far from a convincing victory, though, and we saw some physiological trauma.
Luka Doncic led the team with 33 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists, nearly hitting that triple-double. But he admitted after the game that his legs felt tired after a 4-day break.
Really?
Yeah, it led to a rough 10-for-24 shooting night. He specifically noted he was taking a lot of short shots, which indicates his lift and explosiveness were just lacking.
That seems so counterintuitive. In theory, 4 days off should revitalize a star, especially this early in the season. Why would that lead to fatigue?
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize, maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
It's a classic case of disrupted rhythm. When athletes are in peak game shape, a sudden long break can actually tighten the muscles and affect the neural pathways that dictate explosiveness.
Ah.
Doncic has such a high usage rate that his body is used to operating under constant stress. 4 days of relative rest can sometimes lead to stiffness when they jump back into competitive action. He thought the time off would make things easier, but instead he said it felt harder.
And the whole team struggled, right?
Yeah.
Shooting just 44% from the field and a dismal 26% from three.
Yeah, they relied heavily on Luka's output.
And what about the other legend on that Lakers roster, LeBron James? He's setting an unprecedented standard just by being on the court for his 23rd season.
LeBron, at age 40, played 34 minutes in that contest. And he was brutally honest afterward. He said that this past week, specifically, was kind of like my training camp for me, to be honest.
Wow.
He missed the first 14 regular season games while rehabbing sciatica, so he never got the benefit of training camp or a preseason ramp up.
Calling the middle of November his training camp is a remarkable admission. What does that tell you about how the Lakers are managing his workload moving forward?
It suggests two things. First, he is operating under less than ideal physical circumstances, which means Redick has to be strategic about maximizing his limited availability. Second, the Lakers likely view this entire first quarter of the season as his gradual wrap-up. The team knows they need him healthy in May and June, so even if they struggle slightly now, those 32, 34 minutes he's playing are building the necessary physical foundation that he missed in October.
And he's been remarkably efficient despite the lack of base conditioning.
Incredibly. Dishing out 20 total assists against just 3 turnovers in his 2 appearances since returning.
But the major concern from that win against Utah, however, is the injury suffered by their center, DeAndre Ayton.
That's a potentially significant front court blow right before they play the Clippers. Ayton suffered a right knee contusion in the first half after colliding with Ace Bailey, and that forced him out for the second half. Coach J.J. Redick didn't speculate on the severity, but he delivered the classic next man up message.
Ayton's having a really underappreciated start to his Lakers tenure, isn't he? If he is ruled out for any significant time, who steps into that center rotation and how does that change the team's defensive structure?
He is incredibly underappreciated. Ayton, who signed that two-year $16 million deal this offseason, is averaging 15.5 points and 8.4 rebounds. He's already put up 4 20-and-10 games, matching his total from all of last year. His health is crucial.
So who's next up?
If he's out, Redick feels confident in his options, mainly Jackson Hayes and Maxi Kleber. And this is where the strategic choice comes in.
Right.
Hayes is purely a rim runner, preferring the dunker spot, providing verticality, which might work well with Doncic's passing. Kleber offers floor spacing with his three-point shooting, which pulls the opposing center out of the paint, benefiting LeBron and Doncic's driving lanes.
So the choice between them really dictates whether the Lakers prioritize rim protection with Hayes or floor spacing with Kleber.
Exactly.
Okay, let's quickly wrap up a couple of other key NBA weekend results, starting with the Phoenix Suns.
Phoenix secured their third straight victory, beating the San Antonio Spurs 111-102. What's noteworthy here is that Phoenix overcame an 11-point deficit in the second quarter by absolutely locking down defensively and unleashing a dominant 37-24 third-quarter run.
And Devin Booker just took over in that third quarter.
He did, with 11 points in that period alone.
And Dylan Brooks, an offseason acquisition, is really stepping up as a key secondary scorer, too.
Brooks led Phoenix with 25 points. Booker's added 24. And they needed every one of those points because the Spurs were severely undermanned.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Wembanyama is still out with that left calf strain, expected to miss at least another week. They were also without starting forward Stephon Castle and the rookie second overall pick Dylan Harper, also due to a left calf strain.
So even though the Suns were missing key players themselves, Jalen Green, Grayson Allen, and Ryan Dunn, they managed to rally and win. That shows their improved mental toughness under Frank Vogel.
It does.
Over the Northwest, the Oklahoma City Thunder continue their absolute dominance.
They delivered a decisive statement, blowing out the Portland Trail Blazers 122-95. And this win served as sweet revenge for the Thunder, as Portland was responsible for their only loss of the season back on November 5th.
So now OKC is 17-1, best record in the NBA.
And they're doing it with consistency.
Reigning MVP Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was just unstoppable. But what was the key difference in his approach this time?
He set the tone early. He focused heavily on attacking the paint, not settling for jumpers. 8 of his 10 first half field goals came inside the arc, and he finished with 37 points in just 30 minutes.
Wow.
The Thunder absolutely owned the paint, racking up 58 points there. Conversely, the Blazers struggled terribly, shooting a season-worst 36.3% overall and 12 for 47 from three. Jeremy Grant led Portland with 21, but the lack of perimeter threat just allowed the Thunder to clog the paint and force tough shots.
And finally, we saw a tight battle in the Southeast Division between the Hawks and the Hornets that required some clutch heroics.
The Atlanta Hawks just edged out a shorthanded Charlotte Hornets team, 113-110, thanks to a huge night from Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He scored 23 points, but his clutch performance was what sealed it.
Right. He hit the game-winning layup with under 2 minutes left.
Made it 111-110, and then he stripped rookie Con Muppel of the ball with only 6 seconds remaining to preserve the victory.
Yeah.
That's just pure defensive execution in a high-pressure moment.
It's a great individual effort, but the sustained story here for the Hawks might be the continued descent of Jalen Johnson.
Oh, absolutely. Johnson had 28 points, 11 assists, and 8 rebounds, which is truly remarkable, especially for a player who was once viewed primarily as just a rebounder.
And that performance means he has now tallied 15-plus points, 5-plus rebounds, and 5-plus assists in 8 consecutive games.
8 straight. And that breaks a franchise record set way back in 1965 by the late Lenny Wilkins. The fact that he's surpassing a record held by a Hall of Famer like Wilkins speaks to his emergence as a true point forward in the modern NBA.
And the Hornets, despite missing 6 key players, including LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, still pushed Atlanta to the absolute limit.
They did, thanks largely to rookie Con Muppel, who had a standout night for them, scoring 28 points, including 7 three-pointers. He even hit a 4-point play late to give Charlotte a temporary lead.
A gutsy effort from a depleted squad, but ultimately, Alexander Walker's veteran defense just shut the door.
It did.
Okay, let's unpack this shift in the league. We've seen the games, now let's talk strategy and the intricate financial maneuvers that define championship contention. The trade rumors are starting to heat up.
They always do around this time.
Especially for contending teams looking to solidify one position, like the Boston Celtics at center.
The Celtics have managed their center rotation through, you know, effort and committee. Yemias Queta, Luka Garza, Chris Boucher, and Xavier Tillman are giving them dependable minutes, but the rotation still feels like a strong bench unit rather than a true starting anchor.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, with Jason Tatum returning from that Achilles surgery, the Celtics need specific stability at the five to manage Tatum's minutes and maximize his impact when he is on the floor.
So the Celtics are looking for stability and clarity at the five, and the name coming up repeatedly is Daniel Gafford of the Mavericks. Why is he such a clean fit for Boston's system, which often requires floor spacing?
Well, Gafford is a fit precisely because of what he doesn't do.
Oh, interesting.
He doesn't demand the ball, and he doesn't compromise the structure built around Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Boston's identity is defined by guard play, spacing, movement, and defense. They do not need a high-usage big man who steps outside the arc.
So he just brings clarity.
Gafford is the definition of clarity. He protects the rim, runs hard in transition, screens effectively, and that's crucial, setting solid screens to free up Brown and White, and he finishes lobs at an elite rate.
He keeps the game simple for them, allowing their primary creators to operate without traffic. And we know he has playoff experience, averaged 12.4 points and 6.3 rebounds in 22 minutes last season, even started 22 playoff games during Dallas's 2024 finals run.
Exactly. He is reliable. A potential starting five of Peyton Pritchard, White, Brown, Tatum, and Gafford is simple, balanced, and predictable. Gafford doesn't need plays run for him. He just provides the stability necessary for Joe Mazzulla to maintain defensive structure and for the guards to operate. He's the classic high IQ, low maintenance big man.
Okay, now let's tackle the financial side, because this is where the sophistication of the trade comes in. The proposed three-team deal involving Dallas and Brooklyn addresses Boston's tricky financial situation near the salary apron. Can you explain the salary apron and why this trade is so clever in navigating it?
So the salary apron is the hard cap threshold set significantly above the luxury tax line. Once a team crosses the apron, they lose access to several critical roster building tools, like the mid-level exception and the ability to take back more salary in trades.
And the Celtics are right up against that.
They're operating very close to that limit. The financial centerpiece for Boston to shed is Anfernee Simons. He's a talented, productive player on a valuable expiring contract, but the Celtics' financial reality makes it almost impossible to retain him long-term without blowing past the apron and handcuffing their future flexibility.
So they use Simons, whom they can't afford to keep, to acquire Gafford, whom they can keep long-term on a manageable contract, plus they gain something massive in the process.
Precisely. In the proposed framework, Boston sends Simons to Dallas, receives Gafford, and they are left with a massive $27.7 million trade exception derived from Simons' salary.
Which is basically a coupon.
It's a coupon the team can use later to acquire players via trade without having to send matching salary back. It's a future spending power they bank today by offloading Simons' contract.
That's a classic contender move, prioritizing the right kind of solution for this stage of the window. Stability and flexibility over retaining a productive player they couldn't afford anyway.
It's stability over upside swings. Gafford stabilizes the middle without compromising the ceiling, and that massive trade exception provides insurance and flexibility for the next year or two, allowing them to acquire another piece if needed without breaking the bank.
Okay, shifting to another high-profile Eastern Conference team searching for an immediate upgrade, the New York Knicks. They are reportedly eyeing a massive, franchise-altering trade target and Anthony Davis of the Mavericks.
The Knicks, sitting at 9-6, have looked ordinary. They've struggled with consistency. They are 18th in the league in defensive rating at 114.8. This is a team that wants to win a title this season, according to reports, and they view a move for an established superstar as necessary to close the gap on Boston and Milwaukee.
And Davis, when he's healthy, provides immediate two-way dominance and is a championship-caliber anchor. Before his injury this season, he was averaging 20.8 points, 10.2 rebounds, 1.6 steals, and 1.2 blocks on 52% shooting. He radically transforms the Knicks' defensive ceiling, which is exactly what they need.
What's fascinating here is the report that Dallas is rumored to be considering a foundational shift, perhaps even a rebuild around Kyrie Irving and young talent like Cooper Flagg, which would make Davis potentially available at what is termed a below-market cost.
If Dallas is even thinking about offering Davis, the Knicks have to pick up the moat.
Immediately.
Okay, so there are two potential trade packages being floated. The first is a straight-up high-salary swap that might be the cleanest path financially.
That's the Anthony Davis for Karl Anthony Towns swap. Davis at $54.1 million for Towns at $53.1 million.
Right.
Their massive contracts basically offset, making it clean under the salary cap. The Knicks would likely view this as a chance to offload Towns, especially considering his defensive shortcomings in Thibodeau's system, for a more reliable, championship-experienced anchor in Davis.
And for Dallas.
It provides a different kind of offensive centerpiece if they decide to move on from Davis's injury history.
The second proposal, however, is the rebuild package, designed to align with Dallas's potential long-term goals, and it would cost the Knicks dearly in terms of their depth.
This package is OG Anunoby, Mitchell Robinson, Tyler Kolek, and a 2026 top 8 protected first-round pick in exchange for Davis. This one favors Dallas significantly. It offers Anunoby for wing depth, Robinson as a solid defensive big, Kolek as a backup point guard, and a future first-round pick. High-quality depth and a future asset.
But for the Knicks, this is a major dilemma. Mm. They value Anunoby and Robinson highly for their current defensive identity, and Davis's persistent injury history makes paying that premium price for him controversial, even if he delivers a title.
It does.
So how does a move for AD shift the perception of the Knicks' competitive window against the Celtics and Bucks?
It accelerates it immensely, but introduces high variance. Trading Anunoby and Robinson gives up the defensive DNA of the current roster. If Davis stays healthy, the Knicks immediately become a true title threat, capable of beating anyone in a 7-game series thanks to his defensive presence alongside Jalen Brunson.
But if he gets injured?
They've sacrificed their depth and defense for nothing. This raises a huge question for New York. How much future depth and defense are you willing to sacrifice for the high-risk, high-reward proposition of a star like Davis, who has proven he can win but is often unavailable?
It's a move that defines championship ambition versus roster stability. That's the defining strategic choice facing their front office right now.
It is.
Speaking of roster stability, let's look at the Detroit Pistons. They are dealing with their own trade rumors centered around Tobias Harris, but for very different reasons. They seem to be prioritizing chemistry over asset management.
Tobias Harris is the Pistons' second highest paid player, and his contract is expiring this season. Standard league practice dictates that expiring contracts are highly valuable for salary matching in any blockbuster trade to acquire a star. So most mock trades assume Harris must be moved.
Right. Otherwise, the Pistons lose a massive asset for nothing in free agency.
Exactly. But the Pistons' front office seems hesitant, despite the ability to potentially acquire a star without losing Harris for nothing.
So what's the counterpoint? Why is that internal chemistry so valuable right now?
The counterpoint is chemistry, continuity, and internal trust, especially for a young team that is experiencing early success. Harris was brought in specifically to be a reliable veteran presence. He's a guy who can get a bucket and play solid defense, but crucially, he has the ear of the young core Cunningham, Thompson, Durin, and Ivy without acting like a drill sergeant.
Or taking away their opportunities for growth.
Yes, he offers consistent professionalism.
So Trajan Langdon, the front office leader, values the structure and stability Harris provides more than the theoretical star they could acquire.
Absolutely. They believe the team is humming right now, playing well and developing cohesion, and they don't want to disrupt that internal rhythm just to chase a big name. The priority is seeing how far the current core can grow internally. The best case scenario is that one of those young guys, Thompson, Durin, or Ivy, develops into the secondary star they need, avoiding the cost of a trade.
And they're looking at the defending champion Thunder as an example of that internal growth success.
Exactly. There's a strong belief that Harris could finish the season and maybe even his career in Detroit, provided the team continues its upward trajectory.
That's a profound contrast to the Knicks' desperation. It really frames the different timelines teams operate on. Okay, let's switch gears dramatically and move to the NCAA, where the Players Era Festival is completely reshaping the early season calendar and the economics of college basketball.
This is a revolutionary event in college basketball, and we really need to understand why. It's expanding in 2025 to feature 18 men's teams and 4 women's teams, taking place across the MGM Grand Garden Arena and the Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas. This isn't just an MTE.
No.
It's a financial powerhouse disguised as a tournament.
And beyond the competitive schedule, what makes this event truly revolutionary is the name, image, and likeness factor.
Yeah.
We need to be clear about how this NIL money is structured.
It is entirely NIL-driven, and it fundamentally changes recruiting. The participating teams are guaranteed to receive at least a total of $1 million worth of NIL opportunities and activities. This money is not paid to the coach or the school. It goes directly to the players through collective activities.
And the structure itself rewards performance.
It does. Teams that finish 2-0 after the first 2 days qualify for the championship and third place games and have opportunities for more money from an additional pool of about $2 million.
So winning literally pays more for the athletes.
Yeah.
How is this financial compensation structured? What are these activities?
The activities are mainly filming, posting, and content creation for corporate brands and sponsors, both on-site in Vegas and after the fact, similar to any professional influencer contract. And the key mechanism here is the value dictated by the athlete's influence.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Michigan's starting point guard, Elliot Cadeau, has 255,000 Instagram followers. His guaranteed compensation from this event will be exponentially higher than a teammate like Yaxel Lendeborg, who might have a fraction of that reach.
So the popularity and influence of the athlete dictates the value of the compensation, much like how celebrities are paid for endorsements.
That's it. This is effectively the financial opening of the college basketball season, integrated right into the competitive structure.
And Michigan, under Coach Dusty May, is a huge example of a traditional institution buying into this new model, right?
Yes. Michigan signed on after seeing the success of last year's event, which was won by Oregon. And crucially, Michigan's assistant coach noted that they factored this guaranteed NIL payout into the total program offerings for their players before the season started.
So it's not a bonus. It's part of their standard compensation package for the season.
Exactly. This guaranteed pool of money makes it a highly attractive destination for top recruits.
Let's run down the men's schedule highlights. Starting today, Monday, November 24th, because this is an absolute gauntlet of top teams all aiming for that championship prize pool.
Today's games are crucial because they determine the bracket for Wednesday and Thursday. We have Tennessee versus Rutgers at 1 p.m., then Kansas versus Notre Dame at 3:30. Later, Houston versus Syracuse at 6 p.m., followed by a massive game, Oregon versus Auburn at 8 p.m.
Which is a rematch of last year's thrilling Sweet 16.
It is. The schedule goes late, with Alabama versus Gonzaga at 9:30 and Michigan versus San Diego State at 10:30 p.m. ET. These are high-stakes early-season elimination games where only the 2-0 teams move on to the championship tier.
And Tuesday continues the stack matchups, giving us a clearer picture of who is contending for that championship game on Wednesday night.
Tuesday features Rutgers versus Notre Dame at 1 p.m. and a significant matchup at 3:30 with Kansas versus Syracuse. And it's important to note Kansas will be without Darren Peterson for all three games due to lingering hamstring issues.
Mm-hmm. With Bryson Tiller continuing to play in.
At 6 p.m., it's Houston versus Tennessee, a potential high-level defensive battle, and later Michigan versus Auburn at 8:30 p.m. The championship game is Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. ET on TNT.
We also need to highlight the Women's Players Era Festival, which is equally loaded with talent and immediately provides title clarity.
Absolutely. The women's bracket features three of the four teams from the 2024 Women's Final Four, so the competition is fierce.
Wow.
The semifinal matchups are set for Wednesday, November 26th, Texas versus UCLA at 2 p.m., and Duke versus South Carolina at 4:30.
And the winners move on to play for the title on Thanksgiving Day.
Correct. The championship and third place games are set for Thursday, November 27th. These matchups are crucial for national seeding and setting the tone for the entire women's season.
Okay, speaking of early season chaos, let's recap the dramatic college basketball action from the weekend, starting with the triple overtime thriller. From high-stakes NIL tournaments, we transition to sheer athletic endurance.
This was a grueling 55-minute struggle. The USC Trojans barely escaped the Troy Trojans, winning 107-106 in triple overtime.
And USC, who were 4-0 coming in after three consecutive 20-plus point victories, was stunned by the tenacity of Troy, especially on the glass.
Yeah, the game was won by junior guard Jordan Marsh on a contested last-second three-pointer.
That kind of marathon game must have been defined by some unusual metrics.
Chaos was the metric. There were 19 lead changes, and five players ended up selling out. Despite USC winning, Troy utterly dominated the rebounding battle. They out-rebounded USC by 24 and collected a staggering 25 offensive rebounds.
25 offensive boards. That shows how tenacious Troy was, using second and third chances to negate USC's talent advantage.
It does.
So who delivered the standout individual performances in that high-pressure environment?
For USC, graduate guard Chad Baker-Mazzara scored a career-high 34 points, along with 9 rebounds and 5 blocks. He's already set a new career scoring high twice in USC's first four games, so he's really emerging.
And on Troy's side.
Cooper Campbell was phenomenal. Dropped 32 points, which included 6 3-pointers and a contested fadeaway shot from beyond the arc that forced the first overtime period.
Incredible. That resilience is what kept the game going for 3 extra periods.
For sure.
From the chaos of triple overtime, let's transition to the success story defined by sheer discipline and rebounding.
Butler. Butler secured the de facto championship of the Greenbrier tip-off, defeating a strong Virginia team 80-73. Both teams moved to 5-1 on the season. Butler jumped out early with a 13-3 run, showing their offensive flow, but Virginia, known for their grinded-out defense, fought back to tie it before Butler took a slim lead into the half.
Their key to victory involved beating Virginia at their own strength, rebounding margin. That is incredibly difficult to do against a top-tier program like Virginia.
That's what's fascinating here. Both Butler and Virginia entered the game ranked in the top 10 nationally in rebounding margin, showing they prioritized the glass. Yet Butler still managed to hold a 43-39 rebounding edge over Virginia.
And Butler has now out-rebounded all 6 of their opponents this season.
Right. That consistency proves they are a physical force.
Finley Bizjack led the scoring charge for them.
Bizjack put up 25 points on 9-for-18 shooting, but the other star was graduate student Michael Ajayi, who recorded his 6th consecutive double-double to open the season. He had 17 points and 14 rebounds, plus 3 blocks.
Wow. And Virginia was led by Malik Thomas's 24 points. This win proves that Butler is a genuine threat early in the season, showcasing both offensive firepower and that relentless physicality.
Definitely.
We had another overtime affair in the Charleston Classic, ending in heartbreak for Boston College.
BC fell 93-90 in overtime to Tulane in the third-place game, dropping them to 3-4. They had a late surge. Bowden Kapke hit a deep three-pointer to force the extra period, showing great poise, but they just ran out of magic in overtime.
And before the game even started, there was some internal drama that added pressure to the team.
That was the situation surrounding Jason Asamoah, who did not play due to an internal issue. Coach Earl Grant refused to elaborate on the situation postgame, only confirming it wasn't an injury and that a decision on Asamoah's return would be made within a day or two. That kind of off-court distraction always impacts team focus.
Despite the loss, a couple of BC guards really stepped up in that game.
Donald Hand Jr. led the team with 26 points, but the true standout performance came from transfer guard Chase Forte. He had his best game as an Eagle with 22 points on highly efficient 7-for-11 shooting, including 5-for-8 from deep.
He provided the necessary perimeter punch to keep them in the game, but unfortunately in overtime, Kapke's final 3-point attempt to tie the game just rang out, sealing the loss.
Tough break.
Turning to women's basketball, we saw absolute dominance from a few major programs over the weekend, starting with the perennial powerhouse, South Carolina.
The number 2 Gamecocks, now 6-0, absolutely demolished Queens 121-49. This performance set a program record for the most points scored under Coach Don Staley and was their 3rd most points scored all time. That kind of offensive explosion shows the depth of talent Staley has assembled.
And this followed the return of a key player who had been absent, Maddie McDaniel.
Yes, Maddie McDaniel returned after missing 4 games due to injury and suspension. Guard Raven Johnson specifically noted that having McDaniel back brought another energy to the team. You could feel her presence wasn't there when she was out.
And the team fell whole again.
Evidenced by every starter finishing in double figures, Joyce Edwards led the charge with 25 points, and they are immediately tested as they head to Vegas for the Players Era Festival to face Duke, and then potentially Texas or UCLA.
We also saw impressive offensive explosions from Illinois.
Illinois delivered a statement win on the road, routing Florida State 86-63. They were incredibly efficient, shooting 50% from the field and a blistering 53% from three-point range.
Gretchen Dolan was the offensive catalyst.
Exploded for 25 points. They also generated 22 points off Florida State's 15 turnovers, showcasing a thorough road domination that elevates their profile significantly.
And finally, the Oregon Ducks also remain unbeaten.
The note, 25 Ducks improved to 6-0 by dominating Utah State 70-34. The game was relatively close at halftime, with Oregon only leading 32-20.
Right.
But the Ducks went on a decisive 16-2 run to start the third quarter, turning the contest into a rout by outscoring Utah State 23-6 in that period. That third quarter push shows their ability to adjust and intensify defensive effort after the break.
Okay, moving away from the current court results, let's look ahead to future talent and some serious off-court stories impacting the league. Let's start with recruiting in the class of 2027.
We're spotlighting 4-star wing Dylan Jones, ranked No. 65 overall in the 2027 national class. He recently completed an unofficial visit to Tennessee, and he really values their defensive culture. He's also seriously considering Alabama, Memphis, and Ole Miss.
It's interesting to see defensive identity being the key factor, drawing a highly ranked wing player. That reflects the priorities of the top programs and modern player development.
It does. Jones noted that he values a coach who can push him defensively, which is precisely what Rick Barnes and the Tennessee staff are known for. That reputation for defensive pride is clearly resonating with top young talent like Jones, who understands that two-way capability is essential for the NBA level.
Okay, now for the very serious off-court news impacting the NBA. Portland Trailblazers coach Chauncey Billups is facing charges related to fraud and money laundering conspiracy. This is a complex case involving organized crime and high-tech cheating.
This is a complex and highly serious criminal case that underscores the vulnerability of the entire professional sports ecosystem. Billups, who is currently suspended by the Blazers, is due in Brooklyn Federal Court Monday to enter a plea. He is one of 31 defendants charged in this sweeping case.
What are the specific allegations against him and others, particularly regarding the high-tech cheating?
Prosecutors allege that Billups was involved in a scheme dating back to 2019 that used the star power of pro athletes to lure victims into rigged illicit poker games. The conspiracy allegedly defrauded victims of at least $7 million using highly sophisticated high-tech equipment.
And this wasn't simple card counting.
Not at all. They utilized devices like X-ray card tables, which allowed cheaters to see the opponent's cards hidden beneath the surface, and altered shuffling machines to ensure favorable outcomes.
That level of sophistication suggests a major organized operation.
It does. Former Cleveland Cavaliers guard Demon Jones was also charged in the poker scheme, alongside alleged members of New York's La Cosa Nostra organized crime families, which really highlights the organized nature of the operation. All of them have pleaded not guilty.
And this investigation led to a related and arguably more worrying case involving current NBA players, didn't it?
It did. A related case charged Jones and current Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier with a separate scheme: rigging bets on NBA games between 2022 and 2024 using insider knowledge.
Wow.
While the specifics of their involvement are under wraps, the allegation is that they leveraged non-public team or personal information to gain an advantage in betting. Both Jones and Rozier have also pleaded not guilty in that case.
The combination of organized crime, high-tech financial fraud, and insider betting allegations creates a massive integrity crisis for the league, regardless of the ultimate verdict.
Indeed. It introduces a challenging element of external scrutiny that affects players and coaches and reminds us of the high-stakes environment surrounding legal sports betting. We will continue to monitor this closely as the legal proceedings move forward because the implications for the league's integrity are immense.
As we wrap up this massive update, let's look at the immediate schedule that awaits us this week. We have the Players Era Festival bracket finalizing over the next few days in Vegas and a stacked NBA slate tonight and tomorrow.
Tonight, we see the Rockets, without Kevin Durant, trying to hold off the Phoenix Suns in a classic old team versus new team battle. Tomorrow, the Miami Heat get Tyler Herro back against the Dallas Mavericks, and we have the high-stakes Los Angeles rivalry, Lakers versus Clippers.
The strategic outcomes of those games will determine the narrative for the rest of the week.
For sure.
You know, looking at everything we've covered today, from Chris Paul's retirement confirming the close of one era, to LeBron James pushing his body through an unprecedented 23rd season and front offices wrestling with these huge trade strategies, it feels like the league is at a crossroads.
That's the central theme here. We're seeing the intersection of the old legends and this new era defined by massive NIL-fueled college tournaments. But the biggest decision defining the league right now, however, is strategic. How much is internal chemistry, continuity, and veteran leadership, which the Pistons are valuing highly with Tobias Harrisworth, when balanced against the pursuit of a surefire established star like Anthony Davis, who the Knicks are rumored to be considering at a premium cost?
That balance between internal growth and high risk, immediate external acquisition, is the central dilemma facing nearly every contending and aspirational team right now. It dictates the future of their franchises, forcing them to bet either on the certainty of star power or the potential of cohesion.
It forces you to ask, are the championships won solely by stars, or are they won by the right combination of high-level chemistry and defined roles? And for you, the listener, how would you manage the risk of trading away future assets for a superstar with a known injury history if it meant an immediate shot at a title?
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us for this in-depth look into all things basketball. We'll catch you next time here on Basketball Home.